Dwight Attic. So before I introduce the introducer, I just wanted to say I've heard this man speak at least a couple of conventions. He touched my spirit, and when I got the privilege of helping come up with speakers for this convention, he was at the top of my list, and I'm so glad you're here, Joel. Appreciate you, man. So that being said, Daryl G is going to come up and introduce Joel.
Yeah, Daryl!
Yeah! D-Man.
I'm Daryl, and I'm an addict.
Daryl.
All right, Joel said don't turn this introduction into a speaker meeting, so I can't fuck up. I think I had about 2 years clean. I was at a convention. I was in convention mode. I'm going to this workshop, that workshop, this workshop. And my sponsor came around the corner, and I'm so grateful that I took a little direction, because my sponsor said, no. You got the ways and means today to get a flash drive. You're going to be of service this weekend. And little did I know that I would meet my good brother, Joel W., work in the hospitality suite, and he didn't know me. I could have had a day clean, a year clean. I could have had 2 years clean like I had. He said, "Hey, we need to do a Costco run," and I jumped in the car, and we just jumped right off into the deep end, man. And he said something so profound to me. He said, "We're going to become great friends, Daryl. All you need to do is just put in a little effort." So when we talk about NA becoming cliquish, or, oh, they got this little tribe over here, or this clique over here, that's right. Get you a clique. Get you a tribe. Get someone that you can believe in. Get someone that's going to call you on your shit. Because get someone that is like Joel W., right? Get someone that becomes a brother. Get someone that's going to call you no matter what, that's going to put effort in, that's going to teach you how to put effort in. So in my notebook, I write little stories, right? So I got my story from Costco to confidants. I give you Joel.
Joel, I'm an addict. Grateful to be clean in this meeting tonight. If you're new, welcome. Is anybody here for their first convention of Narcotics Anonymous? Yeah. Those of us who are more experienced members have a responsibility this weekend.
That's right.
Oh. To love up on them, to bring them into the fold, to touch their hearts in a way that when they go back to their home group after this convention, they're like, and they got that convention hit, you know. And it's not about what happens here from the podium. It's about what happens out there. It's about what happens at the hospitality room. It's about what happens when you cross paths with that newcomer that just looks scared, and you take a little moment out of your self-centered desires to stop and say, "Hey, how you doing?" and connect with them. We have a responsibility here in Narcotics Anonymous, a direct result of this 12-step process, to give back what was so freely been given. And like, this is just one opportunity that I have to be able to give back what was so freely been given to me. And I'm grateful for this opportunity, right? I'm so, so grateful to the Oklahoma region for putting this on. And I want to thank the trusted servants. Thank you all so much for all of your work, your tireless efforts, the arguments, the lack of sleep, the resentments, the 10 steps. And I'm grateful for all of you who sponsored those trusted servants who were there for them when they were, you know, ready to jump off the committee. Because I know what it takes to put this thing on. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of effort behind the scenes. It's a lot of sacrifices to be able to make this thing work, you know, to provide this atmosphere of recovery where the life-saving message of Narcotics Anonymous can be heard and carried. You know, that any addict can stop using drugs, lose the desire to use, and find a new way to live.
Yeah.
So if you're new today and you have not lost the desire to use yet, it's okay. I'm glad that you're here. Is there anyone here within their first 30 days? Welcome. Let's What's your name? What's that? Marcus? Marcus, I'm glad you're here, man. I want to connect with you after the meeting. I'm willing to give 50% if you're willing to give 50, my friend. And on days you can't give 50, I'll give 80. Right? Because there might be days I only got 20 and I need your 80, man. And we can walk this thing out together, brother. You know, my first convention ever was the World Convention in San Diego in 2011. The guys that came into the penitentiary where I was at, they make announcements. They talk about these different events that were going on in a local area, and they talked about the World Convention. I'm an ambitious addict, right? Like, and so I would go big or go home, and so I registered for the World Convention. And when I was locked up, I had $105 on my books. I sent $75 home to my mom to give me a registration for the World Convention. I had parole, no money, no job, no clue how I was going to get there, but I had developed a relationship with a loving God through the 12 steps in Narcotics Anonymous while I was locked up, and I had a little bit of faith in my life. And I knew that if I wanted to have what you guys had, I needed to do what you guys did. And they told me, like, I need to get out and be a part of. And I thought, what the heck? You know what I'm saying? Like, what better place to be a part of than the World Convention of Narcotics Anonymous? And so when I got out, I had 31 days, and I went to my probation officer, and I said, hey, I want to go to this convention in 31 days. And she's like, hold on, homeboy, man, you got, like, you know what I'm saying, this criminal, this violent past, and you want to go out of the state, and you're going to take an airplane. And I'm like, yeah. And I started breaking down my Narcotics Anonymous cliches, and I was like, the only way I'm going to be able to keep this is to be able to give it away, and I got to go there, and I got to find a way to be of service. And I started breaking down some traditions, and telling her that, I'd worked these steps, and I had done all this service, and I needed to go on this world stage and be a part of this life-saving program. And she was probably overwhelmed, and she said, listen, man, if you can stay clean for 31 days, you can go. And I think she gave me one of the biggest gifts that I could have gotten at that point in time, man. It was like this, she believed in me just enough. And I had just enough ego on board and just enough spiritual principle. I was like, I'm fucking staying clean, homegirl. And I made it to that World Convention, right? And I got to the registration booth, and I walked up there, and it was, at that time, before it was all digitalized, it was the alphabet, you know, in your letter, and I walked up, it was WXYZ, and I walked up to the thing, and the lady started going through the envelopes. I said, shared with her who I was, and she pulled out my envelope, and she said, man, you must be important. And I was like, I am, I'm Joel W. And she's like, no, like, there's a letter on your envelope, and on the envelope it said, hey, Joel, I'm so glad that you're here. This is Mo and Ted from Battleground, Washington. We hope to get to see you this weekend. And there was a phone number on it. And Mo was was friends with my mom. My mom was actually Mo's daughter's godmother. And they were in active addiction together. And Mo had got clean and my mom hadn't. And Mo and Ted happened to be doing service at the World Convention on the registration committee and came across my name. And 16,000 addicts. And they saw my name and wrote that letter on it. And I was like, holy crap, man. You know, like, I was like, wow, like, there's obviously a loving higher power happening. And so I embraced that moment, and then all of a sudden, like, I instantaneously turned around, and I saw newcomer girls, short shirts. I was in San Diego, California, fresh out of the penitentiary, man, and I forgot all about that letter. And so I'm on convention mode, and I'm cruising around doing my thing, and attracted to other aspects of Narcotics Anonymous. But I roll into the Saturday night meeting, and we're looking for some seats, and I got my friend Sean with me, who I'd been locked up with, and he had been in Narcotics Anonymous before he got locked up, so we had a little bit of experience, and he was like my wingman, and we're cruising around, and we find two seats way in the back, and we sit down, and there's a rose on these two seats next to me, and I'm there, I got a camera, like a legit camera, taking pictures, you know, and all of a sudden, I look over, and I get this tap on my shoulder, and I look over, and it's Mo, and I'm like, Mo, how'd you find me? She's like, I didn't find you, Joel. This rose is saving these two seats for me right here. And at that very moment, man, it was like that hit of dope that I've been looking for in the trap house for all those years. It was like that third step experience that you have when you turn your care over to a loving higher power. It's that 11th step experience that happens, you know, when you're just praying for knowledge of God's will and the power carried out, and God shows up and just like, bam, homeboy. And I was just like something touched my spirit, and I just became like this, so attracted to this, like the atmosphere of recovery. And it doesn't only always happen here at a convention. It can happen in your home group. It can happen at a, you know, H&I picnic. It can happen in a lot of different places. But when we come together, when the collective higher power comes together and we immerse ourselves in this atmosphere of recovery where there's this love and connection and energy, It just did something to me, and I left that convention going, and I've been on fire for Narcotics Anonymous ever since. And so, and that's why it's so important that we make this the greatest experience we possibly can. You know, we come here, we be of service, and we connect with each other, and we do this because you never know what the impact you have on somebody may be. Where'd he go, man? He couldn't hold on. I was out in the hallway, man, and Daniel, I could tell he was struggling, and I went up to him, I said, Daniel, how you doing, man? He's like, I don't know, and then Shayla got him into the meeting, man, and he just don't know, man. So if you know Daniel, you see him this weekend, love up on Daniel, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know what I'm saying? Daniel needs some extra love. Marcus needs some love.
Yeah.
And so, man, I had this crazy epiphany earlier today, man. Like, at the meeting the other day, my new friend Joe from Santa Cruz says, I'm celebrating 37 years tomorrow. And then this morning, out of nowhere, this gentleman comes up to me and says, hey, I'm James, I got an assignment for my sponsor, or my sponsor, he's got his little notepad on, he's like, I need to get some phone numbers. And he says, I got 3 years clean today. And then, so here's James celebrating 3 years clean, we got Joan celebrating 37 years clean. And where you at, James? Where you at, bro? Where's James? James and Joan, right there together. Stand up, you two. Yeah. So I had this epiphany, right? Here we are, 37 plus 3 equals 40. Celebrating our journey to freedom, right? And pink's my favorite color. I got Joan and James, two pink, you know, matching medallions. And here's the beautiful thing, Marcus. If James can get 3 years clean, so can you, brother.
That's right.
Right? And that's how this thing works, right? Here in Narcotics Anonymous, we practice the spiritual principle of anonymity. There's no big eyes or little U's here in Narcotics Anonymous. We're all just addicts trying to stay clean. Like, just because I'm standing up here today, this doesn't make me any more important than anybody else. I've just been appointed by a loving higher power to serve in this capacity today. You know, and that's it. And so, I'm so, so grateful for this opportunity. And I'm going to get into a little bit of the past for the identification for the newcomer, about what it was like before, and a little bit about, you know, what the transition into this life-saving program was like. But I got this cool-ass recovery story, man. And my journey to freedom has been pretty cool, and I want to be able to share it with you guys. And so, like, I come from good people, man, to, like, really super successful addicts. You know? Like, the addicts, you know, pediatric nurse, union worker, use all week long and still make it to work every day and get a little uppers on the weekend and remodel the bathroom and go to work on Monday. And it's so like from a young age, man, I wanted to figure out how to use successfully. And that was like, I wanted to work for the union and use successfully. That was like my plan. But from a young age, man, like I did not have the ability to use successfully. The first time I ever used is 9 years old. I drank bottles and James wine coolers, took a chew of Copenhagen, puked my guts out, got up the next day and did it again, right? Yeah. So from the very first use, I was not using successfully. You know, and very early on in my life, beginning to finding ways and means to get one more were a priority. And for me, it was to cover up the insecurities and the lack of self-worth and the just the low self-esteem that I suffered with. Because when I used substances, it took away those insecurities, and I felt like I was somebody other than myself. You know, I suffered from a lot of sexual insecurities from some things I was experienced as a child. And no sexual molestation or anything, but I would, you know, hang out with my older cousins and we would change to get in the pool and they experienced puberty before I did. And so I started having sexual insecurities and then I was watching some pornos with my buddies and all of a sudden I'm thinking Ron Jeremy's what I'm supposed to be like and I'm feeling insecure about shit. And a lot of contradiction, confusion going on. And you know, I was a chronic bedwetter till I was like 16 years old. And so a lot of insecurities, right? And I went to prison at 17 years old, a virgin. I didn't have sex until I was 21 years old because I had so many sexual insecurities. But from, you know, 9 years old and then really actively using it starting at like 11, substances took away all those insecurities. And I could put on a mask and I could be somebody else to hide that scared little boy on the inside. And so, you know, I tried different combinations of drugs. And when the drugs wouldn't work, I'd put on some sort of machismo, tough guy attitude, and I'd run around beating people up, and I developed this real assaultive nature. And so, you know, at 17 years old, I went to prison for some assaults. I beat some kids out, out in front of the school. And so when my friends were going off to school to play football and stuff, I was on the way to the penitentiary for the first time at 17 years old. And I'd like to say, like, when I got there, I, you know, got connected with some programming and the fellowship and so forth. But that's not what happened, man. Like, I hit the big yard at 18 years old, and I was caught up. And the crazy thing about it was, man, is like, I grew up in Southwest Washington, predominantly white community. And about 12 years old, man, I got my first Too Short album, and then I got some Biggie, and then I got some Tupac, and all of a sudden I want to be a black gangster rapper. And so I'm running around the streets of Longview in like velour jumpsuits, and I love it when you call me Big Papa. And then I get to the penitentiary, right? And it's not cool to be white and want to be black in the penitentiary. So also I'm like, I'm Big Whitey, right? Confused, stuck in the confusion and contradiction. And when I got out, man, I hit the ground running. I really wanted to do something different, man. But I had got some connections while I was in there. And now I know Paco and Ramon. And got out and I got the plug and I'm good to go. I hit the ground running. I'm just getting and finding ways and means to get one more as a priority, right? And like all my friends, man, were like, had some crazy names like Frog and Crow and and Squirrel and Poncho. And just thinking about the insanity where the disease took me, all these crazy places, right? And so I'm running around and sometimes like I had it going on, like I had a clean velour jumpsuit and other times I had a mismatching velour jumpsuit. But towards the end of the road, man, I had bought this like $500 Infiniti Q45 that the tires went flat about an hour and a half after I drove it. So I was constantly putting air in the tires consistently. And then one day I robbed a dope man, and so this guy ran on the street in his car and ran into the other side of it. And so I spent the next like year and a half, I'd pull up at the trap house and I only park with the nice side of the car out, and this side was all busted up and shit. And I could only stay for about an hour and 15 minutes because the tires would go flat. I have to get to the gas station to get air. Like, so my gangster wannabe ass, man, was busted and broken at the end of the road. Right? And I had tried all different types of things, man. I did geographical chains once, and I'm gonna leave Southwest Washington, I'm gonna go to Alaska, and they got drugs in Alaska. And I'm just like, and not too long after being there, man, I got arrested in Alaska naked. You laughing out of identification? It's okay. So, and I did another geographical change and moved back to Washington. Get back to Washington, and a couple weeks later, I burned my parents' house down and almost killed my entire family. Right? And like, as soon as that whole thing started to work itself out, all I could think about was getting, you know, some of that insurance money. Like, that's where the disease took me, to some dark, dark places. And then I had this brilliant idea, I'm going to bring a daughter into this world, and I think she's going to, I'm going to get clean. And so I, in a relationship with a practicing addict, and I have this brilliant idea that we're going to get pregnant, and this is going to work. And man, I'll never forget, like, so, so vividly, I remember sitting in the hospital room when my daughter was born, and she came out, she was so beautiful. And I remember holding on to her, and all I could think about was getting home and selling everything in the baby room so I could get one more. And when her mom got home with her from the hospital, everything was gone. And she had nothing, we had nothing left, right? And that's where the disease took me, to those places. And it took me to some dark, dark places. And so when I got to the rooms in Narcotics Anonymous, shortly before I got to rooms in Narcotics Anonymous, my Uncle Bob, who's got a bunch of clean time, he's got 38 years clean, he shows up at my house and he's loaded, man. He's, you know, he's well off, I should say. And so when he called and said, I want to come down and visit, I heard he's going to come down and give me some money and I'm going to get on one. And I'm like, oh, sure, come on down. And he shows up and I got cleaned up, my nicest velour jumpsuit, and I'm ready, you know what I'm saying, looking sharp as I possibly can. And he comes down and he's like, hey, man, I want to take you to a meeting. And I'm like, meeting? He's like, yeah, an NA meeting. And I'm like, what? And I'm like, all right, cool. So I'm like, a good addict, man. I got to do what he says so I can get some money. And he takes me to the meeting. And at the meeting, I get a phone list. And I remember they circled up at the end. And they said, I'm the most important person in the meeting. And that's really all I connected with at the meeting. And we got back to the house. And we're sitting on my front porch. And we're talking. And I'm gaming him down. I'm telling him, I really like those meetings. I think I can go back. You know, man, I'm going to take this meeting list. And I'm waiting for him to be like, here you go. Here's a check. Or here's some money or something. And he said, Joel, I'm going to give you something, man. And he gave me a basic text of Narcotics Anonymous. And I didn't know at the time what that book was going to do to my life, right? I had no clue what it was going to do to my life. But I left there with no intentions on going to a meeting. I was actually a little bit frustrated I didn't get any money. But a couple weeks later, my car got broken into, my basic text got stolen. I vividly remember saying, I'm obviously not meant to be a member of Narcotics Anonymous. And a few months later, man, God had other plans, right? And I got arrested one last time. This time I was looking at a prison sentence with no release date. My third strike in Washington. I, you know, I've had this violent criminal history, and there I was looking at another violent crime, and they're going to send me to prison forever. And after I called home, and my parents said, we ain't bailing you out, homeboy. You're going to ride this one out. Like, that's where, you know, the disease took me. And I woke up from my psychosis, 6 days of psychosis, and put my name on some list, and I ended up in my second meeting in Narcotics Anonymous. The H&I Hope Train showed up. Choo-choo! You know what I'm saying? And I stumbled into that meeting. I remember sitting in the back of that at that room in the jail, and the guy that was up there sharing the panel had 3 years clean. I had used with him, and we did time together. And at the end of that meeting, he was going to leave, and I was looking at prison sentence with no release date. And I thought, if that dude can do this, then so can I, man. And I didn't know what that looked like for me. But when he came around and they had asked questions, I raised my hand and I took the meeting hostage for about 10 minutes. But what happened before I started pontificating my madness is I said, I'm Joel, I'm an addict. And something softened in my spirit. And I believe in that moment right there, like, I surrendered to the disease of addiction and started to allow higher power to help me to live with it. Because if you're new right now, this isn't a disease that we become recovered or we become healed. It's a disease that we live with. It's continuous, you know. And we invite this loving higher power into our life, then we can stay in the recovery process. Recovery is ongoing. It's not some sort of an event. And so at that moment in time, I realized, like, you know what I'm saying, that I surrendered and I invited the disease or the God into my life to help me live with this disease. And I'm at use since that day, right? And I started on this path of recovery, and like, my journey has been beautiful. My journey throughout incarceration was beautiful. Everywhere I went, Narcotics Anonymous was at. You know, the guys came out on a consistent basis, and they didn't tell me about how great it was out there for them. They taught me how to be a member of Narcotics Anonymous. My first home group ever was the Birds of a Feather meeting Narcotics Anonymous inside a correctional facility in Washington State. It's a little standalone meeting, man. When I got there, there was like 3 or 4 members, and I invented my own service position in Narcotics Anonymous. It was called the Chain Bus Recruiter. And so I'd go out on Chain Bus Friday, and I'd put my nicest white tee on and crease my pants up, and I'd stand out there, and the Chain Bus would come by, and I'd be like, hey, man, you an addict? And they'd be like, yeah, why? And I'd be like, meeting on Thursday night. And then the next guy would be like, I'm like, you an addict? He's like, no, no, man, I'm just here on burglary charges. I mean, no, you're an addict, man. Addicts steal shit. And so then they'd get their stuff and they'd come to the dorm and I'd be like, on their bunk, hey, man, don't forget meeting on Thursday night. And I recruited a little mission boy in the other unit so he could be over there harassing those guys that went to that unit. And slowly but surely the meeting started to grow. I don't know if it was out of intimidation or attraction. I'm not really sure. But all of a sudden we got this meeting going, man. We're getting some literature. And one day Joel L., man, who brought the meeting to me on a regular basis, he's such a beautiful, beautiful soul. He's like a behind-the-scenes guy. You know, he's just doing service on PR and helping out behind the scenes. Just this quiet, soft-spoken cat. He came in on a regular basis to the meeting. And I always walk with him to the gate. And I would tell him, man, Joel, I owe you my life. And he's like, no, man, you owe Narcotics Anonymous your life. And then and one day we're walking to the gate, and he says, Joel, you know what? Like, this is a program. Have you read the traditions yet? And I'm like, we read them every day in the meeting. And he's like, well, listen to them. You know, and get into the traditions in the basic text and read them. And I was like, well, why? He's like, well, this is a program of attraction rather than promotion. And I think that you intimidating people to come to the meeting, it kind of violates our traditions. And I'm like, okay, cool. So I got into some prayer. You know, I invited God in, and the meeting continued to grow. You know, and I got out the way. And by the time I left that meeting, man, and left the institution, there was like 30-some home group members. We had started a recovery event inside the facility. And that which is still going on today, like it was able to come back after COVID. And when I left the institution, man, I showed you my 6-digit DOC number for a 6-digit clean date, and that's the most important fucking number in my life, right? Yeah. I got 17 years clean. And it was crazy, man. I used to, like, whenever I'm God appoints me and to be of service in this capacity. I find myself in a lot of, you know, lack of self-worth and self-esteem. Like, you know, I don't belong there. You shouldn't be up there, you know. Like, and comparing myself with others who have more clean time. And this year, for whatever reason, man, when I celebrated 17 years clean, I was like, man, that's a long time clean. I don't know why. Like, 17 just became enough clean time to feel good about my clean time. And so I wish it would happen a lot earlier, because I've been really insecure about my clean time for a long time and comparing myself to you guys. But I'm like, you know, 17 years is a long time for a guy like me, you know what I'm saying, to go from the places I went to the places I'm at today. And so I'm so grateful, man, that I've continued to stay in this 12-step process to be able to peel back the layers of the onion and continue to recover. I have no intentions on being recovered. I have intentions on staying in recovery. And I know that, like, God can do a whole lot more with my strength than he can with my control. And so I stay in this 11-step process on a consistent basis. And through prayer and meditation, I'm seeking, you know, a greater connection. And these things are happening in my life. And I'm starting to peel back layers of the onion and become more self-aware of myself. And this is all happening. And all of a sudden, like, you know, I'm no longer a black gangster rapper. No longer Big Whitey. I'm Joel W., man. I'm a soft, cuddly cat, right? My favorite color is pink. I own poodles. I rock a purse. And if by chance you've been judging me in my purse this week, and it's okay, don't be asking me for any, like, toothpicks or some lip gloss or anything, because I got all that shit in my purse, man. But I'm comfortable with who I am today as a direct result of the 12 steps in Narcotics Anonymous. I remember the first time I got up in front of a couple thousand people and I told people I wet the bed till I was 16 years old. That was something like I never was going to tell anybody. But in my first four step, I told my sponsor when I was locked up, and he said, you know what, Joel, it's okay. A lot of people experience that. I didn't know anybody else experienced that. It was a secret I was never going to tell anybody. As soon as I told it, I got to experience a new level of freedom. You know, I want to talk about our journey to freedom, right? When we get honest, we tell our secrets, we bare our soul to other people, we experience a little freedom that just peels back all that stuff and the mask go. And we can just be who we are, and I am who I am today, right? And I'm so grateful for that. And so when I got out, I was on fire for Narcotics Anonymous. Like I said, the World Convention was a hit for me. I started doing H&I service. I actually had the jail panel coordinator still on parole. The application didn't ask if you just got out of prison. It just said if you've been to jail in 2 years. And so I didn't have a box to check. And here I am, like, checking my PO on Friday and taking the panel in on Saturday. And, you know, I've been immersed in service since the day I got here. I got an H&I commitment at the correctional facility back home. And I go out there, you know, a couple times a month on Thursday and hang out with the fellas. And these homeboys show up with their basic text. They introduce themselves as addicts. They're on fire. They want step working guides. And we got behind the walls. And those guys are working steps with individuals outside the institution. And they get to come attend a Sunday morning meeting at our convention virtually. And they're on fire, right? And I'm so grateful because, like Joel said, I didn't owe Joel my life. I owe Narcotics Anonymous my life. And that commitment's not convenient, right? It's 55 minutes, an hour outside of town to get there, 35 minutes through security, hour and 10 minute meeting, 30 minutes outside of security, and 45 minutes back home after a long day of work. It's a big commitment, right? But some of the most rewarding service I've ever done here in Narcotics Anonymous is a service that's not convenient, right? You think this is cool to, like, fly across the country and come do this and stuff? It's cool, right? But, like, you know, like, disrupts my life a little bit. It's, you know, a little bit challenging. I got to go through TSA and fly, and there might be a tornado on Sunday. I can't get out of here. I don't know. You know what I'm saying? But I'd much rather be here in Oklahoma with the chance of a tornado than I was back in the trap house in the midst of one, right? And so I show up for Narcotics Anonymous because Narcotics Anonymous has showed up for me. Showed up for me time and time again, and, like, you know, there was this time in early recovery, I had about 5 years clean, and I started to achieve some of the things that we achieve here, right? Like, I got a job, and I got a little bit of money in the bank account, and I got off parole, and I had my driver's license and my own vehicle, and I started to achieve a little bit of a level of social acceptability. And thank God, man, for the literature, and thank God for you old-timers. I want to thank you old-timers that keep coming to meetings and sharing and calling us newcomers who know some shit out, right? Whether you do it gracefully or you do it abruptly, I'm grateful for it, right? And so, you know, they talked about social acceptability is not equal recovery. And they told me that years 5 through 10 are tough. And what I heard was, Joel, you're not going to stay clean past 5 years. And I told that Tim H was his name, man. I was like, I'm staying clean no matter what. And I basically stayed clean on a resentment and some ego from 5 till 10. And I did more service, and I did more steps, And I did whatever I had to do to get to that 10 years clean. And by the time I got there, you know, I worked a couple more sets of steps. I'd done a little bit more service. My base was a little bit broader, and I had a stronger foundation here in Narcotics Anonymous. And I was not the guy who shared at the end of the meeting to make sure everyone knew how to do Narcotics Anonymous. And I wasn't imposing my will on people anymore. And I was practicing principles a little bit more effectively. And I wasn't taking business meetings hostage. I wasn't lobbying with my sponsees to go into the business meeting to make sure we voted something in so I could get my way. You know, I started to learn some stuff. And so I'm grateful for your predecessors, right, who continue to come and get back and share and are here. There's a lot of, man, I've seen some, I was in the Clean Time Share, there's a lot of people. If you got 40 years or more, raise your hand. Look at this. Like, is 40 years? 40. 40 years. Yeah, like, right here. Like, look. Yeah, look, 40 years clean sitting in the front row. Serving in Narcotics Anonymous. And then I'm attracted to older members, right? Like, that's just been my journey because you guys told me to follow the taillights of those who came before me. And I think there's a lot of benefit to that, but I feel I have a better benefit on gaining their experience if I get in the vehicle with them, yeah. Right? Like, get in the vehicle so when my ass is falling off, I'm struggling, I can be like, hey, Tim, you know, like, how do I do this? Grab the wheel for me. You got to drive the car, man. I don't got to run Tim down and chase his taillights and call him, man. He's just in the vehicle with me. And I can draw from his experience. And so I've been gravitating to older members, and I've been watching you guys recover gracefully and age gracefully and experience, you know, aging and recovery and losing your loved ones and losing your sponsors and experiencing all these different things you're experiencing. And that experience is priceless. And so thank you for coming and sharing that, because I need that. Like, I need to know what it's like to age and grow in recovery, because I ain't leaving this motherfucker no matter what, man. Like, no matter what. I've joined the No Matter What Club, and the things I'm experiencing in my life, I could not imagine putting all that stuff in a pipe. But I know that, you know, if I quit coming here and I come to that place where I'm like achieving social acceptability and I think it's equal in recovery, and I let money, property, and streets run me out of this program, I'm doomed, man. I'll be back in the trap house in the prison cell real quick. And I've experienced all these different things, man. And so I think about all the different components I got, the different things that have happened in my life. And I'm a storyteller. I like to tell stories. Things that have happened to me here in Narcotics Anonymous is a direct result of this process that hopefully will touch your heart in some capacity, the level of identification. And so, you know, you guys told me too, when I got out, I needed to change my people, places, and things, right? And so the equation for that made a lot of sense for me, because when I was hanging out prior to in active addiction, Paco and Squirrel and those people were taking me to the trap house. And in the trap house, there was those things. And the other side of those things usually meant a jail or a prison sentence. And so that equation did not look all that good. But when I got out and I started hanging out with Pawnee and Charlie and Daryl and George and Dougie, and I started going to meetings in Narcotics Anonymous, and I started going to conventions in Narcotics Anonymous, and we started doing the things that we do here in recovery, there was no jail or prison sentence on the backside of that. It was like one miracle after another. And I heard this crazy thing lately. You know what I'm saying? A lot of times we have our meetings in like church basements or back rooms of basements, and on Saturdays and Sunday nights, man, they're inside the main part of the church and they're talking about miracles. But we're sitting meeting in our Narcotics Anonymous seeing miracles, right? And that's what I've been witnessing here, is miracles in your life, and I get to experience in my own life, and it just keeps me coming back. And so I just hang out with people in Narcotics Anonymous, and I go to the places that people in Narcotics Anonymous go and do the things that people in Narcotics Anonymous do. And it's been a good recipe for success. And through that process, like, I've walked through some pain. And you guys told me that, like, you know, pain is guaranteed, but suffering's optional. And so I started experiencing some pain early on in recovery. And in like 2012, I went through this challenging time in Narcotics Anonymous, and if you ever call me back in a workshop about being single in Narcotics Anonymous, I'll share all about that story. But I was, you know, made some poor decisions for a brief amount of time, and I experienced a lot of, you know what I'm saying, pain. And I was like, fuck this, man, I'm done with girls in Narcotics Anonymous. You guys are crazy, right? And so, you know, I invited God in, and in 2012, like, all of a sudden, out of nowhere, I get blessed with this beautiful woman in my life, and God orchestrated this plan, and so Jolene comes into my life in 2012. October of that year, I get a call from my mom. She's like, come over, I need to talk to you. And I go to her house, and she sits me down, and she's like, hey, I got cancer. And stage four, I don't really know what the case is, but I'm doing my best to fight it. And for 4 months, man, I showed up. I told my boss, I said, it's a priority for you to be there for my mom. And I showed up for her, and I shaved her head for her. And I brought her Mary and Berry milkshakes. And I loved on her when she was hurting. And when she was nodding out, I picked her up. And I went to meetings, and I shared about it. And you guys told me you've been through that before. And I cried about it. And I went to meetings, and I shared about it. And I cried about it, and I kept sharing about it. And as it got closer towards the end, I started to understand. Someone told me in a meeting, said, Joel, you need to prepare yourself for the powerlessness that you're going to have to experience when your mom passes away. And I got to a place of acceptance, knowing that, like, I was going to walk my mom home. In January of 2013, man, when she took her last breath, and I was sitting in the prison cell, in the hospital room with her, and not in some prison cell feeling sorry for myself, I was overwhelmed with gratitude for the opportunity that Narcotics Anonymous had brought me to a place where I could be the son that she knew I could always be, right? And so if you're walking through pain, we're here for you, right? You don't got to walk through it alone. And I believe, man, in 2012, like, God brought Jolene into my life because he knew my mom was leaving, and my mom got an opportunity to spend some time with Jolene, and I'll never forget. Jolene left one day, and I was talking to my mom, and she's like, Joel, I'm so grateful for Jolene. I really like her. I'm like, I do too, Mom. And she's like, yeah, she's not like those fixture uppers you usually get. And the cool thing about being in a relationship with a woman in Narcotics Anonymous is that she's got a sponsor, and she's got a set of steps, and she's got a God, and she's got a support system, and I don't got to fix her up. Even though at times I want to, but I don't have to. And so I'm experiencing this, like, NA boy meets NA girl, and we're running off to NA Nirvana together. And it's been a beautiful thing with a lot of pain, but a lot of beauty. And I'm so grateful. When it's not your experience yet, it's okay. You know what I'm saying? If you haven't experienced NA boy meets NA girl, or NA boy meets NA boy, or NA girl meets NA girl, or whatever that may look like for you, it's okay. And you may not experience that, but this is my experience. I'm so, so grateful for it, man, because, like, I need someone in my life. Like, I believe I was created to have, connection with somebody to walk this thing out with. And we have this beautiful life, right? And we've done so much beautiful stuff together. But what's happened recently, and I don't know, where am I with time? Does anybody have a time for me? What's that? Okay. Thank you. So we've had different opportunities throughout the journey to walk through things together, and she's always showed up for me. And so, you know, that little girl that I abandoned in active addiction, she, when I got out, I was a lot of fear, and I didn't have a relationship with her, and so I spent a couple years in a lot of fear and doing some step work, and then in 2014, I started this process to reconnect with her, and I was struggling, couldn't find her, and one day we're going out of town to this event, Jolene and I are, and we stop at the bra and panty store. We were shopping for her, not me, but and she's buying some, getting some bras and panties or whatever, and I'm chopping up the front counter with this lady, and I've been in diligently in this 11-step process. My sponsor was like, just keep praying for knowledge of God's will and the power carried out, Joel. Knowledge of God's will and the power carried out. When the time is right, Abby will come back in your life. And so there I am at the bra and panty store, chopping up the lady, and she's like, you got any kids? And I'm like, yeah, I got a daughter. I haven't seen her in 7 years. And she's like, what do you mean? And she's like, well, that kind of explained to what happened. And I started telling her I was going to the World Convention in Philadelphia and just got back from Las Vegas for Valentine's Day. And she's like, man, you're telling me you find all the country, spend all this fucking money, you don't got a part of your daughter's life? What kind of dad are you? And I was like, damn, man. Like, sometimes knowledge of God's will show up at a lady in bra and panty store, right? And it hit me, right? Like, it's happened in meetings, and it happened today in the bra and panty store. You know what I'm saying? Maybe this weekend it'll happen for you. I don't know. But, like, I heard that. And I called sponsor up. He says, time to get busy. And so I started this process of restoration to be back in my daughter's life. And we did some research, and we found my daughter in Arizona. And so went through this long, expensive court process. And then all of a sudden, one day we're in court, and the judge is like, you know what, man? We're not worried about what Joel used to be like. He's a good man today. He deserves to be a part of his daughter's life. And so in 2016, after not seeing my daughter for, 7 years, got the opportunity to go down to Arizona and meet her for the first time since she was a little baby. And it was this beautiful, beautiful connection, right? Like, she looks just like me, and she had all these questions, and her mom and I were, we felt like we're co-parenting, we're healing a little bit, and I spent the next, like, year and a half just being Disneyland dad and taking her everywhere, and she's going to conventions with us, and we're traveling, and every time I try and give a little pushback on something, she's like, and gets mad at me, and so then I would just give her more shit to, because that was working. And then one day, sponsor's like, man, when are you going to quit being a Disneyland dad and start being a father? And I said, okay. So, like, I was praying for knowledge of God's will and the power of God to be a part of her life, but I didn't know how to be a dad or a father. And so I started this process of trying to create a relationship and some rapport with her, and she had a lot of pushback. And then she would just say hurtful stuff to me, and Sponsor was like, hey man, every time she opens her mouth and starts talking some shit, just tell the disease thanks for sharing and keep coming back. Because when you're serving God and you're serving Narcotics Anonymous and you're doing all the right things, the disease will use any way to get at you. Yeah. And at the time, she was like, a 14-year-old girl is a great place to get at you, Joel. Yeah. And so we did that dance for a little while, and then about 4.5 years ago in July, we went back to court for some child support stuff. Her mom and I did, and it didn't go her favor in court. And her mom and her teamed up against me, and I had to establish some boundaries, and I haven't seen my daughter for 4.5 years, right? She's 19 years old. She wants nothing to do with me. If I gave her money, she would be in my life right now, but I want a relationship. I don't want to be a bank. And it's been a hard boundary to set, right? But you guys taught me about practicing these principles in all our affairs, and I reach out to her consistently. I send her cards, and I reach out to her on holidays and birthdays, and I let her know I'm there, and I'm just waiting, right? Like, if I'm alive and she's alive, there's hope. And you guys have come to me, and you've said, hey, I didn't have a relationship with my daughter for 12 years, 14 years, 20 years. I haven't had a relationship with my daughter for 35 years, and I haven't had to use no matter what. And not by me, by story, I don't know. Right, but I just stay on the path no matter what. And here's the beautiful thing, right? Like when it first happened, I was in the fetal position. And Narcotics Anonymous has blessed me with education. I got an alphabet soup behind my name, and I work in the field, and I got the opportunity to sit across the desk from people and help them save their lives, and help them work through their problems and their relationship issues and their family issues, and there I was, like right after it happened, I'm sitting across the desk, and people were pouring their pay me a lot of money, and they're pouring their life into me, and all I could think about was me. For about 3 months, right? I was just, and I found myself in the fetal position, like, you know, wanting to die. I wanted to go back to the penitentiary because my daughter didn't want anything to do with me. And then all of a sudden, like, I just kept going to meetings and sharing about it. And all of a sudden, my spirit started to soften a little bit. And then one day, it just came to me, and it was like, man, you got a daughter who doesn't want to have anything to do with you, but you got this beautiful stepdaughter that wants everything to do with you. You'd be a fool not to give her the attention that she deserves. And so I started investing more and more time in my daughter, Kelsey. And shortly after that, she's like, she gets into a relationship. And then she's like, Chase proposed to me, and I'd like you to walk me down the aisle. And she had a stepdad at one point in time in her life, and he didn't want anything to do with her. He never invited her into his life. And her dad died of this disease. And so there I am, like, put in a position to be able to be a father to Kelsey, and walk out this, like, this indirect amends to Abby, and this whole process, and this indirect amends to myself. I'm able to show for this girl. And then all of a sudden, like, about 9 months and 6 days ago, she says, Dad, I'm pregnant. And I'm like, holy shit, right? Be a grandpa. And I feel like I'm too young to be a grandpa. And today at 11:43 in the morning, Arizona time, man, my baby grandson was born. And I pushed my flight back because she was due last Saturday, and I wanted to be there for the birth, man. And I wanted to be there so bad. But my daughter knows, man, like, she knows about this fellowship, and she knows about the chapter 5, what can I do, and talking about we can't adapt our life, we can't adapt the program to our life, we must adapt our life to the program. And so the program and recovering our consciousness is the center of my life, and I fit my family and everything in and around. It doesn't mean that, like, I choose this over them, but they know this is important. And she's like, go, Dad, it's okay, I understand. And I can't wait to get home on Sunday and see him, man. And the crazy thing is, man, it's like today when they FaceTime me, man, and he's like looking at me, and he's like, I thought, what a gift to give yourself, Joel, to be here and be clean. And so that moment on December 30th of 2006 when I was holding my daughter and I wasn't in that moment, man. Like, what a gift to be able to give myself bring myself to a place of forgiveness, to be able to be there for him in this capacity, and, like, be in that moment and just know how precious that is. Yeah. And I will give that kid everything he wants. Trust me, nothing's going to the dope man. Like, nothing. So we've got to stay and keep trusting this process, right? And stay on the path because we don't know what's going to happen. And God has orchestrated some beautiful things in my life. And so, like, a couple things real quick, man. Like, I beat up these kids when I was 17 years old, man. That's what I went to penitentiary for. And I wrote them down. I wrote both those kids down on my first 8-step list. And I didn't know what it was like at the time. I had a 10-year no contact order. And I got out and I kept working steps. And I kept, he would come around on my, and both of them, Andrew and Drayson, would be on my 8-step. And I would talk to different sponsors about them and say, hey, man, just don't beat anybody up. Like, that's a good place to start. And spread love and positivity. And be nice to people. And maybe one day God will orchestrate this thing for you. And so I just kept, you know, they kept coming around. And a few years back, I was in Denmark, and I got a phone call at like 4 in the morning. And on the other end of the line, this gentleman says, hey, man, this is Drew. My name used to be Andrew. And right away, I knew who it was. It was him. It was one of the kids I beat up. And I had fractured his skull. He got life flighted to the hospital. He starts giving me the business, right? For about an hour, I listened to him, and he was telling me how he'd been experiencing PTSD, and he'd been in a lot of therapy for a long time, and he was had a difficult time in social settings, and at the very end of the conversation, he said, but 5 years ago, I had called this organization, I started an organization, and he said, I called the organization acting like I was a potential client, and talked to you for 35 minutes, and I knew at the end of our phone conversation that you had changed, and I spent the last 5 years in some trauma therapy getting to a place where I could make this phone call today, And so my spirit softened, right? And I said, what does it look like from us here moving forward, Drew? And he said, I don't know, I want to stay in contact and stuff, and maybe we can see each other someday. And so a year later, he gets dispatched for some training down in Phoenix, out of all the places. And so we met up at a Waffle House, and we sat down like two friends. There was no tension, no pain, no awkwardness. And we started chatting. And at the end of the conversation, I said, hey, Drew, like, what does it look like for us from here? And he said, I don't know, Joel, but with all the work you've done and the way you've changed your life, I think you can help me with my alcoholism. Wow. And so for the past few years, man, he calls me sometimes and he's clean, and he calls me sometimes and he's loaded, but when he calls, I answer the phone. Right, and two Thanksgivings ago, we sat down and we sat down at Thanksgiving breakfast together. And he said, "Man, I'm so grateful for you, Joel. Like, I got 10 days clean at the time, and I wish that I could come up here and say like he's been clean this whole time. But he put some days together and then he relapses. But I promise you, no matter what, as long as I'm alive, I'll be there for Drew, right? Because I owe him that. And you guys gave me that. You gave me the opportunity to show up and be selfless and give him my time. And it's just like every time he calls me, it's just a little bit more freedom, right? And his dad, a couple months ago, I get a message on my phone. His dad calls me up. His dad gave a victim panel statement that like crushed me in the courtroom, right? Like I was the devil in the courtroom. And his dad called me 2 months ago. I never talked to him. And he left me a message and said, hey, I got this guy back in Long. He was struggling with some stuff. I think you can help him. And I called his dad up and I was like, I couldn't even say that. I said, listen, I'm so sorry for what happened back in the day. And he said, Joel, I forgave you a long time ago, man. You're serving God and you deserve forgiveness. And so like, I've gotten a lot of forgiveness and a lot of freedom here in Narcotics Anonymous. The things that like, this pain that I've been holding on to for a long time. So if you're new, Marcus, if you're new, right, and you still got some pain, like you came here with some wreckage and stuff, just keep coming, my friend. Like there's freedom here in these 12 steps. Through sponsorship and service and step work, man, we get this opportunity to get so much freedom. And see, like you know, our medallion, and our symbol, God's self-service in society, right? It's balanced. And I got to stay balanced in all these areas on a consistent basis, because I know like if you took our medallion and chop service off and I try and roll it across the floor, it's not going to roll very far. It's going to fall over, right? So I stay engaged in all areas and stay balanced. And so get balanced, Marcus. Come in here and just God's self-service in society and stay engaged in this process. And through that, like, you know, all this crazy cool stuff will happen. So like, I found myself in many cases in active addiction where I was wanting to run away from the storm. Or in active addiction, always running away from the storm. And I found myself in Narcotics Anonymous wanting to run away from the storm. And then one day, I don't know, quite a few years ago, I had this epiphany, right? I was watching some National Geographic or something, and all of a sudden they start talking about the difference between cows and buffalo. You guys may or may not know there's a difference between cows and buffaloes, but there's a lot of similarities, right? They're both omnivores, and they have hooves, and sometimes they have horns, and they graze in pastures and things like that. And so I was thinking, well, what's the difference, right? Well, cows inherently run away from the storm, right? And they run. It starts storming, they run away. Cows don't have very good endurance. They can't run very fast or very far. Then they start getting pounded by the storm, just pounded, 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 pounded. And eventually they succumb to the storm, right? They just get beat down. Well, the buffalo, on the other hand, when the storm comes, they inherently just run right into the storm because they know on the other side of the storm is clear skies. And the beautiful thing is that the biggest, the strongest buffalo always gets out in front of the herd to kind of like lead the way. And the rest of the herd starts following them. And then they just run through the storm. And they get to the other side of the storm and they face the storm together. And see, that's what happens here in Narcotics Anonymous, man. Like, we got to be more like buffaloes and less like cows, right? We got to find a herd of buffaloes, and we got to find that strong buffalo, that old timer that's got some experience that we can get behind and follow into the storm. You don't got to run away from the storm no more, right? Like, we don't got to be cows, right? And so I get here to the convention, and I'm thinking, there's like buffaloes everywhere, and it's like some spiritual stuff happening. I'm thinking, wow, right? And that's what I've done here in Narcotics Anonymous, and never once have I walked through anything and had to walk through it alone. I've chosen at different times to walk through things alone, and then I suffer enough pain and I get to that state of desperation with some clean time that I'm like real quick, hey sponsor, what's up? And I give him a call. And so, you know, I had left Alaska and I went back to Washington State and I left that wreckage behind up there. And so at 10 years clean, I'd gone for a permanent gate pass in the correctional facility where I was at in Arizona, and they denied me. They said, hey, you got a warrant out of Alaska. And I'm like, oh, shit, right? So I got 10 years clean. I run a nonprofit. I started a nonprofit that helps people get out of prison, and now I'm going in jail. I'm going back to jail. And so I tried to manipulate my way out of it, and the judge was like, hey, man, you don't have to come to Alaska to do your time. We'll let you do it in the lower 48. And so I originally had a 10-day sentence. I did one day in jail. They were going to give me 3 days good time. I had 6 days left to do. And I was like, fuck, man, no way, man. They're going to make me spread my butt cheeks. The food's going to suck. My cellie's feet are going to stink. And I was in like this real self-centered place. And I was talking about it. And guys were like, oh, just go on a 6-day H&I panel, Joel. And go there and carry the message. And I went to jail for a day, and it was fine. And my friend Dan went to jail for a year clean. You know, we did it the whole year. And when he was clean. And so I was like, all right, man. And so I make some arrangements. And I'm at the airport. And I call my sponsor and give him the business about how I'm going to go. This is going to suck. And he's like, Joel, when you go outside and it's raining, it's not personal. And I'm like, what? And he's like, yeah, it's just raining outside. And I'm like, okay, you know, whatever. And I'm just, you know, the sponsor shit. It really doesn't make a whole lot of sense, man, but whatever, you know. And so I get on the plane and I take off to Washington. On the plane, the lady next to me is like, hey, where are you going, man? And I'm like, going on a business trip. And so I show up at this little county jail in Southwest Washington, because when I was back in Washington, they brought food from the restaurant. So I thought, man, they're going to hook me up with some food. And I get there, and that wasn't the case anymore. And but I go in, and I sit down, and I start fellowship with some people. And I'm telling them what I'm doing and my experience. And this guy's like, hey, man, like, I haven't seen my daughter for 7 years, and her mom just moved to Phoenix, Arizona. Do you think maybe you could help me in this process? And I was like, wow, man. And so I said, well, I don't know what I can do for out there, but I got this basic text because they let me bring some literature in. Right? I brought a basic text, It Works Out Why, and a step working guide. I'm like, I was really going to try and carry a 6-day H&I panel. And so I'm in the jail, and I bring out the literature, and we start reading some literature. And out of the bunk, man, comes this Native American dude, and he's like, hey, man, I'm Indian Joe, and I got 7 days sober. And I'm like, right on, Indian Joe. I was like, you know anything about this book? He's like, no, man, I only go to AA. And I'm like, well, it's okay, bro. Don't get all crazy, man. Like, our book's basic, and yours is big. It's okay. You know, it's like, don't be threatening, man. And so we start fellowshipping. A little while later, like the next day or something, we get racked out of the bunks, and the dogs come in. There's, like, paraphernalia on the yard. And I'm like, man, I'm trying to do some cush time here. Like, I wasn't trying to have this whole prison experience. And so they take us out. And they rack us out, and we go out in the Sally Port area, and they're searching around and stuff. And so I go back in, and back up to, like, active addiction, man. I had this girlfriend who had a daughter who had neuroblastoma cancer, and when I was dating her, and she wasn't, her cancer was in remission, things were good. But when it would come back, and we were going back and forth around McDonald's house all the time, I'd bail out of the relationship because it was inconvenient. And Crystal was a good girl, man. She didn't use, but I'd set up shop in her house and so forth. And so Haley had a dad named Sean, and Sean was never in her life. He didn't show up to birthdays or anything like that. And Haley ended up passing away when she was 7 years old. And so Sean and I, he showed up there, and we sat across the bed from each other. And I remember just judging the shit out of him because he was never in her life, and there you are when they're pulling the plug. And that was the last time I seen Sean. And so then they rack us back into the bunk, and they put me in a different cell. And over the side of the bunk comes this guy, and he says, Joel? And I'm like, Sean? And he's like, yeah. I go, how you doing, man? He's like, I'm doing real good. And he was not doing good at all, right? But, and so I was like, started talking about what I was doing, right? Like, I just poured some love into him, and I didn't talk about Haley, but I showed up for him, and it was like another one of those freeing moments that, like, God orchestrated for me. Like, who would have thought? All the days I could have picked to go to jail, all the places I could have picked to go to jail, and there's Haley's dad, the guy who I hadn't seen since we pulled the plug on his daughter, both in active addiction. We end up in the same jail together. And so I gave him, some literature, and I left the jail. Like, I called up his people for me, like you do when you get out. Like, I'm going to call him up and make sure they put money in your books and stuff. And left that jail, man, and me and Indian Joe left together. And I put on my fedora, and he put on his little cowboy hat, and we rolled out of the jail together. And I got outside, and it was fucking raining. And it all made sense, right? Like, it wasn't about me. It was all about God, right? And it was all about me cleaning up my side of the street. And so, when things happen to us here in Narcotics Anonymous, it's not personal. It's just an opportunity. It's an opportunity that God will give us so we can surrender on a deeper level. And we hear those cliches like, God won't give us more than we can handle. And I believe that God will give me exactly what I need, so I'll surrender on a deeper level. And I've got to experience surrender after surrender in this path of recovery. And every time that I surrender, on the other side of that is more freedom, right? And that's continued to manifest this journey of recovery in my life to new levels. And my life is far beyond my wildest dreams. And I'm experiencing this like storybook life with a lot of pain. And some days it's like a Hallmark movie, and some days it's like a, Dateline episode without the death, of course. But I'm okay with all of it. And I just come here and I keep sharing about it. And so, like, and the one thing that I think the greatest gift that I've gotten here is that, like, it's not about the house on the hill or the fancy cars or the letters behind my name or any of that stuff. When I wake up in the morning, I feel good about who I am. And I can rock a purse, and I can wear pink, and I can cry from the podium, and I can share my deepest, darkest secrets with you, and you guys are going to love me no matter what. And but if by chance, like, you're still fronting like you're somebody else, and it's okay, just keep coming, keep working steps. And early in recovery, man, I had about 6 years clean, and I'm a meeting guy. And so I wanted to hit this noon meeting, and we look in the meeting schedule, and it's the only meeting they have in Seattle at noon was a LGBTQI meeting on the Capitol Hill in Seattle. And I'm like, I don't think they're going to let me in, and I don't meet the criteria. And I call my friend Chris, who's gay, and he's like, Joel, they're going to let you in. The only requirement for membership is desire to stop using, man. You're good. And I didn't believe him, so I pull out I make Jolene drive. I get out the It Works Town of Y. I'm doing this tradition study, and I'm ready to go in there and fire some spiritual missiles on them, let them know I'm welcome there. And I get to the meeting, and I come in, they're like, we're so glad that you're here. And you sit down, and they open the meeting up, and the format of the meeting is they call on two people to share, and then they open the meeting up, and they call me to share, and I'm like, oh, shit. So I share about what I was feeling, what I was experiencing, my insecurities. And so, and then they open the meeting up, and right away this guy's hand goes up, boom. And he's like, Joel, man, I'm so glad that you're here. I'm so glad that you shared. I'm heterosexual, and I've come to this meeting for a year acting like I was gay because I didn't want them to kick me out. And so if by chance you're front like you're somebody else, man, you don't got to. We don't care about what you used, how you used, who your connections were, what your sexual preference is. We don't care if you smoked it, shot it, stuck in your butt. We don't care. We're just glad that you're here. We are just glad that you're here. And so, I want to circle back to the old timer and the newcomer. And then I'm going to close. Because, see, like, you old-timers, man, you've inspired me in ways that I can't even really begin to tell you. And so all I do is I continue to show up for you, and I'm continuing to be there for you. But you've said some things that have really inspired me. The cliche stuff, and you talked about early recovery and the things you used to do and driving, towns away to be able to open up meetings, and it just inspires me to do that stuff. And we have the luxuries now, your tireless efforts have paved the way for us to put us in a position where it's not so difficult to stay clean now. And I'm grateful for that stuff. And so, like, you guys said stuff like, I got clean BC. And I'm like, yeah, before crack. And I'm like, cool, right? And that wasn't my story. But I did get clean BF. Before fentanyl, right? And man, that stuff is like, it's just killing us, man. And if you've gotten clean off that and you're here today, man, I'm grateful, right? Like, my home group, Hips looking cool. Home group in Narcotics Anonymous meet on Sunday nights, 6 p.m. 19th Avenue Camelback in Phoenix, Arizona. I'm sure that there is a 19th Avenue Camelback here someplace in Broken Arrow or Tulsa, Oklahoma, right? Like, people are dying on the streets outside of my home group, and we're saving lives in the meeting, right? That's what it's like. And it's not uncommon to be driving my home group, and it's 110 degrees outside, the pavement's probably 140, and we got somebody on like that nod, burning their cheek on the pavement. And I'm just like, man, I'm so grateful to be clean, right? Like, so grateful the disease doesn't take me to those places. And so if you're ever in Phoenix, Arizona, come see me, right? I would love to have you come to my home group. I got an end to the speaker seeker too, man. Hit me up. I'll get you at the podium, man. You can help us stay clean. And so I'm so grateful to be here today. I'm so grateful for this opportunity. If you see me this weekend, please love and hug on me. I need it. I may be an extroverted, like, energetic guy, but trust me, like, I need as much love as I can get, because there's something that reciprocity that happens when your heart touches mine, and the oxytocin hit happens, and that feel-good chemicals that just keeps me coming back. I need that. And if you're new and you still want to side hug a little bit, it's okay. By the end of the weekend, I'm going to try and bring you in a little bit closer. Like James, for example. James side hugged me this morning, and then when I gave him the medallion, man, he just came in for a full one. And at the end of it, he pulled me a little closer, right? We soften up here in Narcotics Anonymous, and a lot of that happens through that loving hug. And so I'm grateful for the committee. I'm grateful to be clean. I'm grateful for all the love that I've experienced up to this point so far. And so just for now, be unafraid. My thoughts are going to be on my new associations. People are not using. And as long as I fall that way, I have nothing to fear. I'm Joel Mack. That's all I got.